introduce our main speaker, Ray Kay from Marina Del Rey.
Hank Jace, God damn. Hi, everybody. My name is Hank Johnson. I'm an alcoholic. And I might have been known as Ray, too. I don't know. Sometimes I don't know who the hell I am. I want to thank the committee for asking me to speak here tonight. And I had no idea it was going to be as big a deal as it is. A lot of people here tonight. And there's a lot of, there's several people that I know here that it's always nice to see people that I haven't seen in a long time. And I used to hate that when I was still drinking. Chances are I owed them money or something, you know. But now I can meet eyeball to eyeball with anybody. There's no one that I know of that I can't meet. And that's really pretty nice freedom to have. I used to drink a lot. I drank for a lot of years. I guess I started drinking when I was in high school, at 13 or 14, you know, the behind-the-gym type drinking at the dances and stuff. But I hit the big time when I was 18 years old. When I was 18 years old, I went into a bar. I ordered a drink. And here in California, you know, you're supposed to be 21. I passed for 21, and they served me. Immediately, I became a man. I was in a hurry to become one, and a man can buy a drink over a bar without being asked how old he is. I graduated right then and there. I got my bachelor's, master's, and PhD all in one shot. What else is there to learn? You know, if you can buy a drink over a bar without being asked, you've arrived. I could play the jukebox over in the corner just as good as the rest of the guys. In fact, I thought my selection of songs were a little better than most. I could sit at the bar and look at myself in the mirror and get better looking after each drink. I just loved it there. I just felt at home. You know, I heard somebody say something. I don't know if it was today or not. They said it came into AA and I just felt at home. Jeez, that's not me, I'll tell you that. I felt at home in that bar, though, and I just went back every opportunity I had from then on. From then on, I drank on a regular basis. From then on, alcohol was the focal point of my life. But a fine thing happened when I was 18, and they served me. My emotional growth stopped right then and there. And I dealt, the next 25 or so years, I dealt with life with an 18-year-old set of emotions. You know, that's okay when you're 18. But when you start getting in your 40s, it gets to be a drag. No wonder I was a rotten husband. No wonder I was a rotten father. You know, hell, I was 18 years old. And I had to retire before I reached my potential. My drunkalog is really a boring story. Probably heard much more exciting stuff than I can ever tell you today, right here at this podium. I'm sure everyone that spoke before me has had a more exciting drunkalog than mine. You know, God, you hear such exciting things sometimes. Some of these guys really did a lot of great stuff while they were drinking. I heard of a guy who went into a bar, he punched everybody out in the bar, the cops came, he punched the cops out too. They drug him off the jail. They threw him in a cell. He walked over the bunk he wanted, pulled the guy out of the bunk, and punched him out, too. Now, that is exciting drinking. That's real cheese. How I really admired that guy. Another guy I heard, he's driving 70 miles an hour, and he decided to make a U-turn right in the middle of a tunnel. He used to hit telephone poles all the time, only they were 100 yards off the highway. Another guy I heard, he was a jet pilot. He went on a 3-week drunk. Came out of a blackout, going faster than the speed of sound at 30,000 feet. Man, that is really drinking. You know. I really admire those guys. All I ever did is just sat around and drank. I meant to do a lot of this stuff. I just never got around to it. I didn't know I was going to be the main speaker here tonight. Had I known, I would have tried to spice up my story a little bit. But I just sit around and I drink. I watch a lot of TV. And I play old phonograph records sometimes. Sometimes I read a book. Nothing very heavy, just some condensed version in the Reader's Digest. And I'm just kind of an observer of life. I don't participate in it. I just observe it, that's all. I always know if I really want to live, I know I could do it a lot better than a lot of other people can. And sure as hell can't blame anything on me, I'll tell you that. I didn't do anything. My wife used to kick me out of the house a lot. She used to get tired. She'd come home, and for some reason, it bothered her because I drank. I could never figure it out. She'd tell me to leave, you know. I had no self-worth back in those days. She'd say leave, and, you know, it never occurred to me to say, wait a minute, you know, I live here too. I'm making the payments on this place, you know. And how can you kick him out of my own house, you know? I never occurred to me to say that. I just packed my Vaughn shouting bags and split. I never moved very far from the house, though. I just moved right there in the neighborhood, you know. I'd work my way back in. I was in and out, back and forth. She divorced me 3 times. And the last time she divorced me, I wound up in a little garage house in Hermosa Beach. It was a half a block from the water, half a block from the ocean. And I thought, Jesus, it's going to be great. Yeah. And every morning I'm going to go down and run 5 miles along the ocean side, you know, right along the water, you know. And then when I get through with my 5 miles, I'll jump in, I'll swim around a while, and ride a wave in, you know. And I go to work, I'll feel terrific. As far as I know, the water was down there. I never really got around to checking it out. Oh, I only lived there 4 years, my God. And a lot of people in AA have dual problems nowadays. You know, they're alcoholics and drug addicts. They're alcoholics and overeaters. Alcoholics and this and alcoholics and that. I'm an alcoholic and a procrastinator. I always figure if a thing's worth doing, it's worth waiting until tomorrow to even consider doing it. As a result, I postponed living for about 30 years. I heard an Alateen speaker speak one time, and it was really good. And his mother used to tell him, why are you such a procrastinator? And he says, what does that mean? She says, why don't you look it up in a dictionary? He says, I will later. And I identify with that. And a typical day for me back then was to wake up, it'd be 10 o'clock in the morning. Jeez, I'm already an hour late to work. Oh, man. I'd throw my clothes on and get in that car, and I'd weave in and out of traffic. I had to get there because he said I should have worked yesterday. I left all these papers all over, and I had papers in my desk drawer. Some of them were months old. They were too old to turn in. If I didn't turn them, you know, if I didn't turn them in, I was going to be fired. If I did turn them in, I was going to be fired for holding them so long. And actually, what I was doing is I was racing the boss to my desk. If he found that desk, I know there'd be a note there. See the boss, and I'd be fired. I knew it was going to happen today. I had that feeling of impending doom that they talk about here in AA. I had never heard that expression until I came to AA, you know, feeling of impending doom. But boy, I sure had the feeling. And I'd get to work, and everything was the same as yesterday. Whew, saved again, you know. I'd get a cup of coffee and come back to my desk and shuffle papers and make excuses to my customers. They'd want to know where their stuff was. And I'd say, you haven't got that in the mail? God, I'll take care of that personally today. You know, the class of help we have to hire nowadays just can't depend on them. They don't know what the word service means. You know, I'll take care of it. Or I'd use the computer excuse. That's a good one. They're still using that right to this day. computer's been down for the last 3 days. As soon as it starts working, I'll get a printout and I'll call you and we'll get all this. You know, if you don't hear from me within a week, call me again. And, hell, I'm one of the originators of the computer excuse. I used that excuse before we even had a computer in our office. At a respectable time, I'd go to the bar that was conveniently located right next door to where I worked. And he sold martinis over there. And I'd go over there for lunch about 4 to 12 or so. And during the lunch hour, they sold these martinis for a double martini for $1. And the regular ones were 75 cents. I figured, who the hell ever heard of having one martini? You're going to have two anyhow. So you might as well order the dollar one. You'll save 50 cents. God knows you need the money bad. And I'd order that dollar martini, and I'd get to sip it on it, and I'd kind of check my drink against the guy sitting next to me. He'd have a 75 center. And I'd say to myself, I wonder who the hell they think they're kidding. This isn't really a double. It's a little larger than a 75 center, that's all. If it were a double, they'd be charging more money for it. And I know these things. I better have another one. Then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one. Then I'd call the office. I could have hollered over there, but I always called them. I always had a lot of class, Call them on the phone, Tom. I forgot to tell you, I'm going a lot of calls this afternoon, take messages. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. I'd head towards the beach. I'd stop and buy the cheapest bottle of vodka I could find. Whatever was on sale that day, that's what I bought. And I'd get home about 2 or 2:30. I'd hang up my clothes real neatly so the creases fall properly, Put my tie and shirt and shoes away. And put my pajamas on. And I'd sit on the edge of the bed, untap that cheap vodka. Like a big, big jolt out of it. Several swallows. I'd say to myself, you've done it again today. This cannot continue. You're not the only guy that's ever been divorced. You're not the only guy that's ever been in debt. Why the hell don't you do something about it? All you do is sit around and talk about stuff. You never take any action on anything. And I'd put one of these old 78 records on the turntable. Something like Billy Eckstine singing, Who Can I Turn To? And then I'd... and then I get to talking to myself. I'd bawl myself out. Why don't you get a second job or something? You can't do anything about your marriage, but at least you could get a second job and get out of debt. And I think, you don't need to get a second job. You're in sales. If you're in sales, you can make any amount of money you want to make within reason. By God, that's right, I'd say to myself. And starting tomorrow morning, it's all going to be different. Starting tomorrow morning, I'm going to get up at 6 o'clock. I'll get down to that damn office by 7. I'll knock out paperwork for a couple hours. When that phone starts ringing tomorrow, I'm going to be ready to do business. And starting tomorrow, a whole new life begins. I'm going to mark it on big X on my calendar starting tomorrow. And starting tomorrow, I'm going to work 365 days in a row without taking a day off. Every waking hour, I'm going to be earning money. Sell, 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 Monday through Friday. Saturday, I'll go in the office and I'll do my paperwork and keep that up to date. I can go in there on Sunday. Hell, I got a key to the place. I'll go in there on Sunday and I'll plan my work for the coming week. If you're at sales, if you plan your work and then work your plan, you can't miss. I know that. I've been in sales a long time. Jeez, what a trick. I surprise myself sometimes. I have such wonderful ideas. That's a terrific idea, That's what I'm going to do, And I'm really happy by now, so I got cause to celebrate, so I have another drink. Then I think, starting tomorrow, I'm not even going to drink. I'm going to go 1 year. I'm going to work, 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 and I'm not going to drink. I'm going to devote 1 year out of my life getting squared away. Jesus, how exciting, And maybe I'll go to a New Year's Eve party and have a drink. But outside of that, I'm not going to drink. And If I trip on my income, I'll be out of debt in no time. What are you going to do with all the money then? One of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to buy a white Lincoln Continental car. I'm going to drive it up to that house where she still lives. On the way up there, I'll buy a beautiful greeting card. You know, I'll stop at the Hallmark card shop and I'll buy a beautiful card. You know, no 25-cent or at least a dollar card. You know, something with a lot of beautiful poetry, a sticky kind of sentimental poetry. You know. And over on the left-hand side, I'll put "Thanks for all the good years, H." Yeah. Not Henry, not Hank. Just H. And then I'll get a gold-plated key, and I'll put it in that envelope with the card. And I'll drive up at midnight, and I'll hang a U-turn in the cul-de-sac, and I'll coast right in front of the house, real quietly. You know, I'll tiptoe up on the steps, and I'll put that card down the mail slot. Then I'll split. The next morning, she'll get up. She'll go through her routine. And sometimes she'll get her mail, you know, and she'll look at that envelope, no stamp on it, you know, the big envelope. Naturally, she'll open that one first. She'll open the card and the key will drop out. I wonder what that key is, she'll say. Then she'll read that poetry, you know, that sticky, sentimental kind. Tears will just roll down her cheeks. Then she'll look at, she'll see, "Thanks for all the good years, H." Then she'll get to looking at that key and she'll try to figure out what that key's for. Somehow she'll look out in front of the house. You know, the white Lincoln Continental out there. Brand new, shiny, beautiful. You know. She'll put it all together that's her automobile. Then she won't think I'm so bad. Then she'll be sorry. I don't know about you people, but I just get a big charge out of giving those expensive gifts. I just feel great by now, you know. I'm playing upbeat music by now. You know? I look at the clock, it's a quarter, you know, 10 minutes to 11. 10 minutes? It can't be 10 minutes to 11. I just sat down on the edge of the bed here. Can't be that late. And I call the operator. 10 minutes to 11. Gee, I can't believe it. And then I'd realize I was almost out of booze. I'd throw my clothes on over my pajamas and I'd run 2 blocks to the liquor store. I had to get there before 11. That's when I first started jogging about that time. And I'd get there just as he was closing up, you know. All the Smirnoffs. I always bought the better brands right around where I lived. I wouldn't want them to think I was cheap right there in the neighborhood, you know. I could stroll back to my garage house in peace and contentment and security for the rest of the night. I'd get back there and have my dinner, like a cold hot dog out of the icebox. Then I'd have a few more drinks and play a few more of those old records, you know. And I think, you know, I think what I'll do is I'll work 2 years in a row. You know, and then after 2 years, I'll take a whole year off. I'll buy a boat. I'll sail all over the world. You know? And I used to start thinking about that. And I've sat on the edge of my bed. I've sailed everywhere in the whole world. I've been everywhere, you know. Then I'd start rehearsing the speech I was going to have to give. Because I knew I was going to be salesman of the year. Somewhere in there, I'd pass out. And I'd wake up the next morning. It'd be 10 o'clock. I'm already 1 hour late to work. Throw on my clothes and get in that car, and I'd weave in and out of traffic. I had to get there. See, I should have worked yesterday. I left all those papers all over my desk, and I had papers in my desk drawer. Some of them are really old. I knew if I was racing the boss to my desk is what I was doing. And And I'd get there and check everything out. Everything's the same as yesterday. Phew, saved again. Go get a cup of coffee, come back to my desk and shuffle papers and make excuses. And at a respectable time, I'd go to the bar that was conveniently located right next door to where I worked. I'd go over there and make my big decision of the day, whether to have the dollar one or the 75 cent. And then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one. Then I'd call and tell them, I forgot to tell you. Got a lot of calls, take messages. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. I'd head towards the beach and get home about 2:30 after buying a bottle of cheap vodka. And I'd get home and I'd put my pajamas on and I'd sit on the edge of the bed. I'd open that cheap vodka and I'd take a big, big jolt out of it. And several swallows full. I'd say to myself, well, done it again today. This cannot continue. You know, you're not the only guy that's ever been divorced. You're not the only guy that's ever been in debt. Why the hell don't you do something about it? All you do is sit around and talk about stuff. You never take any action on anything. And I put one of these old 78 records on the turntable. Something like Billy Eckstein singing, Who Can I Turn To? Then I give myself a real hard balling out. God, at least you get a second job. Can't do anything about that marriage, but, at least you get out of debt. Starting tomorrow morning, it's all going to be different. Starting tomorrow morning, I'm going to get up at 7 o'clock. I'm going to get down to that office by 7. I'll knock out paperwork for a couple hours. When that phone starts ringing tomorrow, I'm going to be ready to do business. I'm going to mark it on my calendar. Starting tomorrow, I'm going to work 365 days in a row. Jeez, what are you going to do with all the money that's going to come in? Buy a white Lincoln Continental now. I didn't do that once or twice. I did that hundreds of times. I don't know how I kept my job. My job was all I had left. I had drank my home away, my wife away, my kids. Everything was gone except that job. I was living in this little crappy garage place, And the only thing I had left is my job. I worked for a big company, prestigious company. They put my name on one of their business cards. That's all the respectability I had left. And I didn't want to lose that job. I was afraid I'd lose that job. And then I could see myself hanging around the VA hospital or something, And so I hung on to that job. And it's funny. I always made my quota in that company. And I was in the top 10% in sales in that company. I can't tell you how I did it. And every year they'd give me a plaque with my name on it for outstanding salesmanship and product knowledge and all that good stuff, all over that plaque for product knowledge and being the type of representative we want to represent this company and all that good stuff. Eight drunken years in a row, I won a plaque every year. And then I got sober. Then I didn't win a plaque for 8 years. A lot of guys, they get sober and they just rock at the start of them. My God, they just make all kinds of money. They're driving Rolls Royces within 6 months. Not me. When I got sober, I had trouble working. I still think I should be worth a lot more money than I'm worth right now. I don't know what happened with me. I just didn't do it right or something. But I had trouble working. In fact, after 2 years of sobriety, almost 2 years of sobriety, I walked in that office and the guy fired me. And I said, you can't fire me. I've got an outstanding sales record with this company. Not lately, you don't. And I says, well, we'll see about this. I went to see the regional sales manager company. And he said, I can't do anything about, I says, what they don't, what they want to do? They want to fire me down there at the branch office. Can you believe that? Me, with my outstanding sales record. And he says, what they don't know is that almost 2 years ago, I completely changed my life. I quit drinking. I'm trying to make it with my wife again. I'm trying to pay my bills on time. become a citizen in the community again. Now they want to fire me. And I said, maybe they should have fired me before, but gee, not now. And he says, well, I can't do anything about that. He said, I had no idea you had trouble with alcohol. He says, I'm sure, hope everything works out for you, you and your wife and all that. And he says, but I can't interfere with what goes on at the branch office. He says, but I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put you on paid leave of absence for a very short period of time. You claim to be a salesman, go sell yourself to another branch office. We got 80 of them. And that's what I did. And I managed to hang in there with that company for 25 years. And a couple of years ago, I quit before they found me out. But what happened to me is what happens to a lot of people in AA. I've seen it happen time after time. Some of us just don't get the God part right, you know. And some of us just get so spiritual that we just sail off into the blue. And, you know, like, I knew that the rest of you guys had to work and all that, but, you know, I found God. You know, I'm spiritual. I don't, you know, I'm just a cut above the rest of you people. And my sponsor finally got to me, and he said, you know, Hank, he says, you don't seem to have a very good grasp of this program. And he said that, you know, he says, I've seen guys like you. He says, some of us just get so heavenly, we just become of no earthly good to anybody. And he pointed out that in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that states in there that it's okay to have your head in the clouds, but we should keep our feet firmly planted on the ground. That's where our fellows are. That's where the work is to be done. And that's what I've tried to do ever since. You know, I really did deserve to be fired. I look back at that, and I really deserve to be fired because, see, I was spending about 90% of my day back then calling other members of Alcoholics Anonymous instead of working. I deserved to be fired, you know. And I changed my attitude about work about that time, and I tried to give some service down on the job there, you know. But I thought you were supposed to get a reward just for showing up sober, you know, without a hangover, on time. You know, they don't give raises for that. They expect you to show up that, you know. And it's what you do after you show up sober on time. That's what they pay you for, it turns out. And, God, if they knew the sacrifice I went through to get there on Monday morning alone, I should have got a $100 a week raise. Yeah. So, before all that happened, I got a call from my ex-wife. She said, come and get your drunken son. He's just like you are. Seemed that he had turned 16. He's getting in trouble in high school. Nothing major, just a lot of nickel and dime stuff. And just driving her crazy. And he went to a party one night and had some drinks and came home and threw up on the carpet or something, you know. It was the last straw, and she couldn't handle it. And she called me and said, come and get your drunken son. Instead of, you know, I had no self-worth back in those days. I should have said, wait a minute. You won that kid in his divorce settlement. You know, you're having trouble with him? Why deal with it? Don't bother me with this stuff. You were so anxious to keep him, you know. But no. She said to come and get him, and he didn't want to come and live with me. I didn't want him to come and live with me. But she said. So we had to do it, right? But that was the start of a beautiful relationship that we've got going to this day. And we really did pretty well, batching it together, you know. It was the start of a beautiful relationship, you know. We had something in common to base a relationship on, a resentment. Mom had kicked us both out, you know. But it wasn't about a month later that she moved in with us, too. She came down one Sunday and checked him out, and we got to talking. You know how that is. One thing led to another, and we decided that we were really miserable people, but we seem to be more miserable apart than we were together. Why don't we try this thing one more time? We start promising things to each other that Sunday. She'd promise me something, and I'd promise her. And then she'd promise me, and I'd promise her. We spent the whole entire Sunday afternoon promising wonderful things to each other. I'm sure we knew we couldn't fulfill those promises, but we really had a good time that Sunday afternoon. One of the things she promised is that she wouldn't fight me on my drinking anymore. In fact, she joined me. I should have been suspicious, but I wasn't. Because, see, all the years I was married to her, she never drank. She was afraid to drink. She always knew she was an alcoholic. Before she even drank, she knew she was an alcoholic. She was like, you know, like you go to the supermarket and can buy instant mashed potatoes. They're not really mashed potatoes until you add the liquid. And that's the way she was. She was an alcoholic and who had just not added the liquid yet. You know. And as soon as she took her first drink, she was a full-blown alcoholic. And, you know, she knew this because she was quite a bit like her father. Her father was a real nice guy, had a wonderful personality, and people loved him, just wonderful. And he'd take a drink and he'd be on a 3-week drunk, you know, and he'd wind up in the hospital or worse sometimes. And, she knew that she was like that, and so she was afraid to drink. And so little did I know that when she promised she wouldn't fight me on my drinking, she'd join me. Little did I know that she had been drinking already, and she just for a short period of time, and she had already crossed that so-called invisible line into alcoholism. And in my case, I think I drank myself into alcoholism. I wasn't an alcoholic from the beginning. I had a lot of fun with alcohol for a lot of years. It was a social lubricant for me. It enabled me to dance and romance and do all the things normal people seem to be able to do without that stuff. I just needed that little bit to get me started, you know. Then I was okay. But I needed a few drinks. And I think, you know, I don't know when I crossed the line. I don't know when I became an alcoholic. 10 years into my drinking, maybe? I don't know. All I know is that I did become allergic to alcohol. Same thing happened to me with penicillin. I took penicillin for a lot of times, several times. The last time I took penicillin, I wound up in the hospital for 8 days. I damn near died. The doctor said, my God, he said, don't ever take penicillin again. He says, you might die. I said, well, what are you talking about? It's always worked before. And he says, well, you've become allergic to it. And he says, believe me, don't ever take it again. He says, I really can't guarantee you won't die the next time. No kidding. I promise, I told him. I'm proud to stand up here tonight and inform you people that I got about 28 and a half years off of that stuff. I haven't had to join any kind of an organization. I haven't had to apply the 12 steps to my penicillin allergy. And haven't had to get a sponsor. I don't even know if they've got Penicillin Anonymous or not. They probably do. They got every other kind of an anonymous nowadays. But it hadn't been necessary for me to call anybody up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and say, got this uncontrollable desire to take a shot of penicillin. It turns out the allergy to penicillin is a little bit different than the allergy to alcohol. I just never have ever had a craving for a shot of penicillin. And, but anyway, I became allergic to alcohol. I don't know when. I just kept on drinking. And when she moved in, you know, things were bad before she moved in. But my God, you know, when the two of us drank, it was terrible. It was just, you know. And I used to get, you know, go to work late, come home early, and I'm sitting there drinking and playing phonograph records and fantasizing. And here comes my son home from school. It'd be like 2:30 or something. And I'd say to him, you know, who the hell do you think you're kidding? It's only 2:30. School doesn't even get out until 3. You're already home at 2:30. How can that be? and I'd stand there in my pajamas with a bottle of vodka in my hand. And I'd ask him, how the hell do you expect to amount to anything? You know, if you don't apply yourself in this world, my son, you haven't got a chance. I'm really worried about you. He looked at me funny. He always had three or four guys with him. They all looked at me funny. Then they'd go off surfing, whatever it was they were doing. And I'd wait for my wife to get home. And I was always anxious for her to get home. I'm kind of a grouchy guy if I'm not drinking. But, geez, if I'm drinking, I don't care who you are. I like you the best. You're the most interesting person I've ever met in my entire life. I want to hear your whole story, from day one. You know. I'm prepared to sit up all night with you and hear your plans for the future, As long as we've got booze, I'm right there with you all the way. And I especially like my family when I'm drinking. I just love them. God, I'm the luckiest man in the world, Be able to be married to a beautiful woman like that. My two wonderful children. I just can't get over how lucky I am. What a pleasure it is to work for them and all that and provide. I just know that I'm the most fortunate person in the world. And she'd come home. And we'd have our first drink of the day together. And she was always glad to see me, And she'd come home and we'd have a drink. And as she was finishing the first drink, I'd start getting a little cozy. And she'd start getting standoffish. And by the time she was finished with her first drink, she'd be in a full blackout. And all the pent-up emotions and hostilities of a lifetime come out in that first drink. And we could, we could never drink together. She was just not a fun person to be around. I'm not here to take her inventory, you understand that. I'm just going to tell you a few of the things that she did. It will help you understand my case a little better. But she did stuff like throw the Christmas tree lights and all out the back door. She used to break my old 78 records. Just because they played it more than once, And I told you, I stopped growing emotionally at 18. Here I am in my 40s. I'm still playing the same records I played when I walked in that bar, And I got a whole stack of those records. And I'd play one of those old 78s. And, God, I'd hear that song. It's like the first time I ever heard it. My God, what a terrific song. I'd play it again. And I'd play it again. And then again, and again, and again, and again. It used to drive her crazy. She'd walk over to the phonograph and take that record. Don't break that. That's a collector item. You can't replace those. Good. I'll never have to hear that damn thing. Sometimes I'd get hung up on a trumpet toot. I'd lay that needle in there. Shoot. Oh, man. That's right. Lay it in there again. I love music when I'm drinking. It's sentimental. It's ballads. I love those ballads. And one time she walked over to the phonograph, just took the arm, bent it up. I couldn't play any more records that night, I'll tell you that. Next morning, I got a pipe wrench and a hammer and pliers. I tried to straighten out that metal arm. I couldn't even budge it. I don't know where she got her strength from. I finally told her, I said, this isn't working out any better. It's worse than it ever was. And some people should just not drink. That's all. You can't handle this stuff, You shouldn't drink. So I said, I allowed you to kick me out of those other houses. But I moved here first. Therefore, you go this time. I'm going to go to my brother's house tonight. While I'm gone, I expect you to move. I expect you to pack up and leave. You know, when I come back tomorrow morning, I expect you to be gone. That's more time than you ever gave me. And I went to my good brother's house that night. You know, the brother that you can go to at 12 or 1 o'clock and knock on his door. And as long as you got something in a brown paper bag, you know, you're welcome. He'd just pull you right in. Not my square brother lives in Temple City. You'd go out to his house on Christmas Eve, you know, and he'd pull a bottle down from the shelf and open that would be the finest booze you can buy. You know, nothing but the best, that guy. And he'd open that bottle, he'd pour you a shot. He'd pour himself a shot. Merry Christmas. Have a drink with him. He'd put the cap back on, put it up on the shelf. Next Christmas Eve, you go over there. Take the same bottle down for you the second one. You know, I didn't go to his house. You know. I went to my good brother's house and sat up all night with him and drank, philosophized. And it seemed like his wife didn't quite understand him either. And so we had a lot to talk about, a lot in common. And so we talked all night. And while I was gone, my wife decided to commit suicide. You know, that's what she used to do all the time, commit suicide. She was suicidal, you know. You know, she used to do it. She knew just how many pills to take. One more pill, she'd have been dead, you know. But she knew not to take that one. And you know, that's the way you change your environment. Some people change their environment like that, you know. They take just enough, and then people walk softly for a few days around her, you know. But in fact, she was suicidal, right into AA. She had about 8 months of sobriety. Something bad happened. She never could remember what it was, but it was bad, we know that. Because she was going to kill herself, you know. It had to be pretty bad. But she decided she couldn't. She remembered she couldn't kill herself that day because she was the cookie lady at the meeting that night. And, you know, sometimes you wonder why they give some of us flaky people some of the jobs they give us around here. They're life-saving jobs, that's why. Her sponsor finally got to her and told her, you know, you better knock that crap off. One of these days you're going to hurt yourself real bad. But that night she decided to do it. But I was over at my brother's house. But before she did, she went into the closet where my clothes were hanging and just took a knife and slashed every bit of clothes I held in a blackout, you know. She just ripped everything to pieces, just cut my shirts and cut the pant legs off my pants and just ripped my ties in half and my shirts and sweaters and everything. Even went into my dresser drawer and cut up my shorts, for God's sake. She even stabbed my damn shoes. Just made a complete shambles out of everything. Threw pictures all over the place and photograph records and lamps and just demolished that place. Then she took the rags that she had made and put them around the doors and the windows of this little place we lived in. Tried to make the place airtight, you know. And she turned the gas on, kitchen oven. Went to bed, went to sleep. And she woke up the next morning, looked around, you know. Woke up again, you know, failed again, you know. But she could not believe what she had done. She had been the only one that had stayed there that night, you know. And she knew she had done it, but she didn't remember any of it. And she just could not believe what she had done. And then I came home. And I had trouble believing it myself. And then our son came home. He thought we were moving again. And we had hit bottom. That was our bottom. I'm from a good family. She was from a good family. When we got married, we had wonderful plans. We were going to live a great life together. We had plans. We were going to live the good life. But all we had managed to do is sit around over the years and drink every bit of goodness out of our lives. And from then on, nothing was good. From then on, it was all bad. And it wasn't all that good before that, but from then on, it was bad. And we had hit bottom. This is the part of the story where generally guys say, and I hit bottom, so I called AA. Some real nice guy came out, took me to a meeting. Everything's just been wonderful ever since. I didn't know enough to do that. I just kept on drinking. Sometimes they say, I had a moment of truth. So I called AA. Geez, not me. Every time I had a moment of truth, I drank immediately. I can't, don't tell me the truth. I cannot handle the truth about myself. I just barely can handle the truth about you, but don't tell me. Don't tell me the truth about myself. I've had 1,000 moments of truth. I drank every time I ever had one. And it hit bottom. But we had started back to group therapy a little bit before that. We had gone to group therapy off and on for years. About the only thing I ever learned in group therapy was that my mother-in-law had grave emotional problems. If she didn't, why did she bother us so much? Why was she always there? And why didn't she live her own life? Why was she living her life through us? And all that. I learned all that at the therapist. But this therapist asked me one time, do you really drink as much as she says? And I said, hell yeah, I do. I drink a lot. Who wouldn't marry to a woman like that? I got 2 of the worst children you could possibly imagine. And this pressure job, my God, the pressure on that job alone would make a person drink. But what's the big deal? So I drink, so what? They've never missed a meal. They've always had a decent place to live. They've always, had medical attention. They needed braces. They got braces, whatever. And so I drink. So what? If I thought it hurt them, I never deprived my family of anything. So, I just don't understand what the major problem is here. And he said, have you ever thought of quitting? I said, as a matter of fact, I have. I think about it every night. Starting tomorrow, I'm not going to quit tonight, but starting tomorrow, I am. And he said, have you ever thought of going to AA, Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, thanks, but no thanks. I've already been to AA. And I had gone to a meeting one time. It was one of these meetings where they pass out chips for various lengths of sobriety. And the leader that night said, has anyone just finished their first 30 days of sobriety? If so, come up and get a chip. And here comes this guy up to the podium. My name's Joe Blow. I'm an alcoholic. I'm really proud to get this chip. I know this is a spiritual program. I found God when I walked through the doors of AA. It's the lights in the eyes of the people that just turn me on, keep me coming back to these meetings. I just love every single person here. Just before I came to the meeting tonight, my employer called me. He's made me general manager down at the plant. The wonderful, glorious way of life we have here. These 12 wonderful steps. And for all you newcomers, keep coming back. We love you. Jeez. Anyone else? Here comes this lady. My name is Mary Smith, and I'm an alcoholic. And I know that this is a spiritual program, that I found God when I walked through the doors of AA. It's the lights in the eyes of the people that just turn me on, keep me coming back to these meetings. I just love every single person here. Hate is no longer a word in my vocabulary. I just love everybody. Not just the people in AA, but everybody in the whole world. And I'm proud to say that my husband is looking at me with renewed interest. My children, just a short time ago, were failing in school. Now we're getting letters from all the major universities throughout the United States. When I wake up in the morning, I reach over and I grab the hand of God. I walk through the day hand in hand with God. A wonderful, glorious way of life that we have here. These 12 wonderful steps. And for all you newcomers, keep coming back. We love you. And God, I could hardly wait to get out. I needed a drink on time. Man, I needed a drink bad. I could hardly wait to get the hell out of there. I never went back, I'll tell you that. And this therapist asked me, you ever thought of joining AA? I forget it. I've already been AA. Some kind of a, I don't know, spiritual thing. I don't know, it's a religious cult of some kind. It's okay for them, but I'm just not interested in it. So I said, but I just read an article about some stuff called Anabuse. I think I'll get some of that. Because I'm going to quit. I'm just going to quit just to prove once and for all that alcohol is not our problem. You know, I was right about that. Alcohol wasn't our problem. Alcohol is a symptom of our problems. But I said, I'm going to quit. I'll get some of that Anabuse. And I said, if I feel I'm going to drink, I'll pop some Anabuse. Then I won't be able to drink because I'll get sick. And according to this article, sometimes people die drinking on top of Anabuse. So that'll keep me, that'll be a deterrent. And so he put me in touch with a doctor. The doctor's receptionist said, don't drink for at least 48 hours prior to coming on the appointment if you want Anabuse. So I didn't. I went on that appointment, and the doctor said, is it true that you haven't had a drink for 48 hours prior to coming here? I said, that's right. He says, you don't need Anabuse. He says, if you can go that long without a drink, you're over the hump. He said, if you can go that long, you never need to take another drink as long as you live. And I wasn't, you know, that scared me a little bit. I wasn't quite prepared to quit that long at that time. I just wanted to get the heat off a little bit. And he just went on and on and on about alcoholism. You know, he gave me a lecture on alcoholism. And he was telling me about people with the disease of alcoholism have character defects. You know, they refuse to cope with their problems. Instead of coping with their problems, they drink tonight instead. And they wake up the next morning and they still got all their problems, only now they got a hangover on top of it. And they keep doing it over and over again. And he was telling me my story, but I just didn't recognize it at the time. And he just went on and on and on about alcoholism. And I finally told him, I said, well, you know, I don't know why you're not going to give me any advice, but if you're not, then I guess I better go. How much do I owe you? And he said, I can see I'm not making any kind of an impression on you. So I'm going to tell you something I wouldn't normally tell my patients, but due to the nature of your appointment here today, I'm going to tell you something. He says, I happen to know a little bit about alcoholism. You see, my wife's an alcoholic. We've tried everything known, medical science, for her alcoholism. We've tried rest homes and sanitariums and drying out places and treatment centers and psychiatry and Anabuse. And tried everything. And it all works, temporarily. But just as soon as she's out of one of those places, she drinks again. You know, if you can stay in one of those places for the rest of your life, maybe you can quit drinking. But he says she's sober today, 7 months. She goes to AA. And that's what I recommend that you do. Promise me when you leave here today that you'll drive up to the clubhouse in Manhattan Beach and buy the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. There'll be no charge for this call. That's the only thing that guy said that day that impressed me at all. I went up and bought the book, threw it on my dresser, had another drink. Crazy doctor. Then this fiasco happened, and where my wife tried to commit suicide. She had been with me and heard all what the doctor had said. And so she went back to see him on her own. And she asked him if he thought she was an alcoholic. And he said he didn't know, he couldn't tell her if she was or not. But why didn't she go to some meetings with his wife? She'd be happy to take her. And so she came home that night and said, I'm going AA with the doctor's wife. Oh, God. Yeah. I just remember the name of the organization. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. That means no names. Don't give them my name, whatever you do. You're not married, remember? You don't have a husband. Just leave me out of that. And off she went to the meeting. And the very first thing they told her in AA, the very first thing they told her was that it wasn't her fault that I drank. You know, they could have started her off with something entirely different than that. But they told her, you know, if you're taking the credit or the blame for his drinking, you're only kidding yourself. You're on some kind of an ego trip. If you think you got that kind of power and you can make somebody drink over you, you know, he would have drank whether he ever met you or not. And you can't make him quit either. We don't have that kind of power. We can make anybody quit drinking. So don't pour his booze down the sink. He'll just go buy another bottle. Just let that SOB drink himself to death. If that's what he wants to do, it's his life. You know, if you think you've got a problem with alcohol, maybe you better come back to these meetings and work on your problem. Just let that SOB drink himself to death. You know. And she kind of liked the ring of that. That sounded pretty good. So she went to meetings, and every once in a while, to be a good guy, I'd go to a meeting with her. I hated the meetings. I couldn't stand them. You know, I refused to listen. And you can't get out of that of those meetings. You know, as soon as the meeting ends, you can't leave because it's another meeting that starts immediately after the meeting. You know, and I'd stand there, you know, and I could see these women coming towards me. And the closer they came, the closer they got, the longer their fingernails became. And little things growing up. They were looking for new blood. And they'd say, are you Lou's husband? And I'd say, yeah, I'm Lou's husband. Well, are you an alcoholic too? I'd say, no, I'm not an alcoholic too. She's one. Work on her. Don't bother me. Yeah. And so I just stopped going. I hated it. I couldn't and I wouldn't listen. You know, I refused to listen. Well, I'll be damned if I didn't get the message anyhow. Just don't seem to make any difference what your attitude is. Just if you can get to some meetings, why something's going to happen to you. And it happened to me. I screwed up my drinking. That's really what they did. But I stayed sober from before Thanksgiving clear through Christmas. I refused to go to AA. But I figured, well, I'll quit anyhow. And I got willpower. I can quit. And I did. I quit. A little bit before Thanksgiving. I didn't drink. Through the drinking is part of the year. Through the Christmas holidays. And Saturday night after Christmas, she went off to a meeting. I was home there by myself. I figured, I got to thinking. And I figured, you know, if you haven't drank since before Thanksgiving, and you didn't drink through the drinking as part of the year, the Christmas holidays, you know, that proved something. You were wrong. You're really not an alcoholic after all. So I went to the liquor store. I bought a half a pint of vodka. I no sooner got back to the place and I drank it. What the hell did I buy a half pint for? I went and got a fifth. I got another fifth. I drank all Saturday night and all day Sunday. I closed the bar up somewhere at 2 a.m. Woke up the next morning. It was 10 o'clock. I'm already an hour late to work. Yeah. You got to go in on Monday, right? If you don't go in on Monday, you're an alcoholic. Well, I found that out right here in AA. I know that. So I made it in. Especially the Monday after a holiday, you got to show up. So I did. Showed up, but I was sick. I was really sick because I hadn't drank for a little over a month. and I poured all this alcohol into my system all at once, and man, I was sick. So I went over to the bar a little early that day. I had to get some medicine. I ordered a Bloody Mary. That's what you order when you're sick, you know. It's not a social drink of any kind. It's a glass of medicine. I ordered a glass of medicine. The guy got a big tall glass out. He filled it full of ice. He poured a shot of vodka, some tomato juice in, some Worcestershire sauce, some Tabasco, squeezed a lime, put some salt. I thought I'd never get the damn thing made. Yeah. I took that drink. I drank it straight down. Hit bottom. Put the fire out. God. Make me another one. And I went to the restroom because I'd spilled half of it all over my tie. I went in there and cleaned the tomato juice off my tie. And I came back. He said, did you want another Bloody Mary or did you want a martini? And I said, I'll just skip it. I went over to the coffee shop section of the bar. I had a sandwich and a glass of milk. And I haven't had a drink since. I was just so sick that day. I don't know why I quit drinking that day. I didn't plan it, I'll tell you that. I hadn't thought about quitting, you know, at all. But I did. You know, sometimes I thought later on, geez, had I known that that was going to be my last drink, I sure as hell wouldn't have had a Bloody Mary. Okay? I could have had something in a fan, like a 50-year-old brandy or something, you know, in a beautiful glass. And I could have drank it straight down, smashed it on the floor. Stomped out of the bar, you know, triumphant over alcohol. But I didn't know I had quit. You know, 2 or 3 weeks went by. I found myself in AA meetings, all places. And then, you know, I realized I hadn't had a drink in 2 or 3 weeks. And then anger set in. I had just completed about 30 years of drinking. I got this rotten wife. I got 2 of the worst children you could possibly imagine. Pressure job. My God, the pressure on that job alone. I owe money to everybody. It's all past due. And now I can't even drink. What am I going to do? Nothing. That's what I'm going to do. Absolutely nothing. There's nothing you... guy like me can do if he doesn't drink. No relief at all. You know, I need to have a drink now and then to relieve the pressure, you know. And now I can't drink. I'll never be able to go to a decent restaurant ever again. You know, I'm stuck at Denny's for the rest of my life. You know, what's the first thing they want to know when you go into a nice restaurant? Go into a nice restaurant, they want to know, would you like a cocktail before dinner? And you can't say to them, well, yeah, I'd like one, but you see, I've got this disease. I used to think I had explained that too. And everything I knew for sure turned out to be all wrong. Now I went to a nice restaurant just recently. The waitress came up, said, would you like a drink before dinner? No thanks. Didn't even faze her. Yeah? I used to worry, what are they going to say? when they find out I don't drink, turns out they don't really care out there. It's their indifference that bothers me. If they cared one way or another, it'd be something, but they don't care, period. She just went over to the next table and asked them. I looked over, checked over there, and they're drinking over there, you know. They always drink over at that next table. You know. I'm the only guy in the whole place not drinking. You know, it's okay. I've had my share. I drank for 30 years. I drank 60 years worth in 30, you know. But the sick part of this whole story is, every once in a while, I look over at that next table, and they're drinking over there. And there'll be a well-dressed couple. They're celebrating an anniversary or a birthday or something. They're all dressed up, looking good. They'll have martinis. Be clicking these martinis in a toast. And after 19 years of sobriety, sometimes that still looks good to me. You know I haven't been cured of alcoholism yet. You're not dealing with a well man here tonight, I'll tell you that. Because sometimes that still looks good to me. I've heard the message every way you can hear it. I've heard it. I've been at thousands of meetings. Literally, thousands of meetings. And still, it still looks good to me every once in a while. And I know I've still got the disease of alcoholism, and I'm never going to get rid of it. But I've decided what I'm going to do. When I die, I'm going to leave my brain to science. When those doctors, you know, when I die, they'll take my brain and they'll study it. And they'll look and they'll see, oh, yeah, that's why, because he's an alcoholic. It's an alcoholic brain, you know. And they'll study that. And then they'll put it in that solution that they put it in, you know, that alcoholic solution that they... They'll drop that brain in that solution, you know, and when that brain hits that solution, man. And it's just finally, it's going to take 5 minutes or so, it'll finally calm down and lay there. But I'm sure if you put your ear down close to it, I'm sure you'll hear it say, ah. But until then, God, I'm going to go to a lot of meetings, I'll tell you that. I'm going to call my sponsor all the time. I'm going to read the big book. I'm going to come up here anytime I'm asked. I'm going to go anywhere because I want to maintain my sobriety. Because my sobriety is the most precious thing that I have in the world today. I never want to drink again as long as I live. I knew my life was over when I had to stop drinking. It was all over. Now I really know. If I started drinking, it really would be over. And I never want to drink again. So I want to maintain my sobriety at all costs. I don't care what it takes, I'll do it. And I'm very, very enthusiastic about the program at Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it took me about 6 months to get used to the program. And when I had about 6 months, I got a sponsor. And that's when my alcoholic... Anonymous career really started. That's when I really got into it. Because I got a good sponsor. And you know, you get a good sponsor will insist. If you get a good sponsor, he or she will insist that you work the steps. And that's what my sponsor did. He insisted that I work the steps. I didn't want to work them particularly, but he insisted. You know. And I had no sincerity. You know, I was in a big group, and check with my peers, what step are you on? They'd want to know what step I was on, you know. And I'd, well, what step are you on? I'm on step two. Well, then I'm on step three. I always try to keep one step ahead of, you know. And I took these steps, no sincerity at all. And I'll be damned if I haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, just as if I'd have been sincere in the first place. It doesn't seem to matter. You just work them, that's all. And I'm very glad that I had a sponsor like that and still have him. Because, you see, you need, if you're not going to drink, you need something to replace that. To replace that craving. Replace those crazies that you get. And you have those 12 steps in your as a platform or a foundation of life. And I used to read all these inspirational books and how-to books by experts. And you know what an expert is, don't you? Expert is the guy that knows 100 different ways of making love, doesn't even have a girlfriend. And it's okay, you know, to read that stuff and you get a knowledge. You still don't really know anything until you experience it. Until you experience it. And that's what I've been doing here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been experiencing. And I heard a lecture on TV. This guy said, you know, most of us haven't been, you know, we think that we're looking for the meaning of life. And that's why we read all these books. We're looking for the meaning of life. But it turns out that's not really what we're looking for. You know, what we really are looking for is the experience of being alive. The experience of being alive. And that's what's happened to me over this last 19 years. I've had the experience of life. And you know, life is wonderful. The only trouble is that it hurts every once in a while. You know. But I'm really grateful for the life that I've got today. And I'm grateful that I have those 12 steps in my background, because you see, you never know when the chips are going to come down. And the chips came down for me about 8 years ago. My wife came to my office one day, and she said, the doctor just told me I've got cancer, lung cancer. I got 2 or 3 months to live. I said, my God, you're kidding. You know, and you know, jeez, you know, what a shock. And we had planned to retire up in the desert. And now she had cancer. You know, I don't know what you people do, but when I've got problems like that, you know, the thing that I have to do, I go to a meeting. I go to a meeting that night. Whatever, you know, I go to a meeting. And I went to a meeting that night. And they read, I don't know if they do it up here, but they read the last page of the book, on page 164, and they, a vision for you. And it states in the last second paragraph to the end there, it states in there that ask in your morning meditation what you can do for the man who is still suffers, or the man who is still sick. I never can quote that exactly right. But obviously you cannot help anyone unless your own house is in order. And you know, that night, that had a hell of an impact on me. It's like the first time I ever heard it. And I've heard it a lot of times, but I really heard that night. And I said, you know, maybe I am working this program. Maybe I'm really working it. Maybe this program has caught on because my house is in order. You know, my house is in order. Jeez, what a revelation that was. And I'm going to be able to help my wife because I'm dependable. I'm a responsible person. You can count on me. And I was able to be some assistance to her. And our house was in order. Everything that needed to be said had long been said. You know. And she lasted 5 years. And I was able to, we had a wonderful 5 years, really. And we had a wonderful, she had 16 years sobriety when she passed away. She sponsored a lot of women. She was a very enthusiastic member of AA too. And when she died, she didn't even know me. The last 3 or 4 months or 6 months, she hardly even knew me. And when she died, it was a shame that she had to go. But we were expecting it, you know. And even when you expect it, it's still a kick in the solar plexus, you know. It's just, I don't care how well you think you're prepared for it. But I'm able to stand up here tonight with no guilt. See? Because our house was in order and our life was current. And if anybody would ask me, Hank, what have you gotten out of AA? What is it that you really have got? Naturally, you've got sobriety. But what is it that you get here? You know, you get caught up. You become current. You become current in all your affairs. It takes all the heat off. You don't have to worry about things because you're up to date. You can meet people and look them in the eye because you're current with the world. You're current with your bills and current with your relationships, current with everything. That's what I've got. And so when she passed away, it was a shame. And I miss her, you know. I'm proud that she was the mother of my children. You know, we had some good years in AA. We had a turbulent marriage, but we had some good years in AA. But I can stand up here tonight and tell you folks that I'm not guilty. That I don't have to say, geez, if only I would have done that. I should have said this. I should have said that. No. I'm free. When she passed away, I'm free. I've been set free. Now I got a choice what to do with my life. Now I can mope around if I want to, get a lot of sympathy. A lot of people knew my wife and they knew me, and I could really get the sympathy. You know, poor guy. You know, here they work so hard for everything. And just ready to retire, and then she, you know, I could really get the sympathy. Or I can choose to live. And I've chosen to live. And at this stage of my life, I just have an incredible life. You know, the things that I'm doing, it's just absolutely remarkable, some of the things that I'm doing. I entered the date scene again after all these years. You know? And that's really a kick. Yeah. I'd get interested in a lady, I'd call her up, you know, and ask her for a date. And I'd say, I know she's not going to accept. I know. I have this feeling of inferiority and inadequacy. All these feelings, you know. And I'd call up and I'd be, sure, I'll go. Oh, God, now what am I going to do? I'm really screwed now. I don't, you know. And I had all these feelings that come back that I had when I was 17 or 18 years old. You know. And I remembered why I started to drink in the first place. But I'm going to work through this thing without a drink this time. They say that everything that you've ever done and while you're drinking is going to happen to you in sobriety. But I got it. It's been true so far with me. But I have a wonderful life. My son that used to look at me so funny back in those days, it turns out the reason he was looking at me so funny is that he was stoned out of his gourd. Seemed like he had a problem with alcohol, too. And drugs. LSD. All that stuff. He did it all. I'll be damned if he didn't turn himself into AA when he was 21 years old. And I watched him take a cake last May the 27th for 15 years. He's a big-time operator in AA, I'll tell you. He was a Palm Springs Young People speaker here a few years ago. You know, that's really quite an honor where I come from if you're asked to speak at Palm Springs Roundup. And there's 2,000 or 3,000 people sitting out there in the audience. And he was going to be the Young People speaker. And he bought himself a new suit and shoes and got his hair styled. It's really looking good. First time I ever seen him dressed up after he'd become a man, you know. Since the last time I bought him a suit. And he was really looking good. And he stood up on the stage in Palm Springs with 2,000 people in the audience. And he said, my name's Matt Johnson. I'm an alcoholic. I also use drugs. I'm the son of a drunken mother and a drunken father. My wife and I looked at each other, just burst into tears. We were just so goddamn proud. My wife's son, I mean my daughter's son, she had when she was a real young girl. He's 22 now, and I think tonight is his fourth birthday. It might have been yesterday, I'm not sure. My daughter and my daughter-in-law both send you greetings from Al-Anon, and we're an AA family, and we weren't any kind of a family 19 years ago. We're still not the best family on the block. I wouldn't try to kid anybody around here. You know? But we're doing all right because we've all got the 12 steps to work if we choose to work. So about the only thing I can tell you here tonight for sure is what I heard that first meeting that I ever went to. And that's, this really turns out to be a spiritual program. And I know that I found God when I walked through the doors. You know, it's the lights in the eyes of the people. Turn me on. Keep me coming back. Thank you very much.